Let me just go back in. Oh, hi, this is Parent Talk with Bev. This is part two of the interview with Paul. We got cut off. That's what happens when you're doing things live. So if you've come back, great. And if you're joining us, you're going to have to listen to the first part one of the conversation between Paul and I. But where we got cut off, we were talking and we were saying that it's interesting that if you don't have positive people around you who actually believe in you and want the best for you, that you can easily slip off the slope.
Absolutely.
You know, and I think especially now that, you know, the situation that we're living in with George Floyd, with the policing issue, with COVID-19 and the inequalities and racism and the things that are bubbling up to the surface that we have always known has been there because we've been through the British education system. It's even more important to have people around you and even people in school who actually believe in you, that you can do well. You understand? Otherwise,
absolutely.
If one conversation can turn your world around to positive or negative, or a series of expectations can make you, you know, say it's not worth it and just give up, which is what I've seen when I used to work with Young Leaders Academy that only worked with black young boys, you know, and I say the funny thing is that a lot of those young boys, they were referred or their parents would bring them to us to do Saturday leadership with them. And what was interesting was these kids were not really bad at all. You know what I mean? It was just that the school or the teachers didn't understand. I'm sorry, I know you're a teacher and I've been a teacher as well. But it's just that the school didn't understand them and just labeled them straight away. And then after one labeling, another person labels. And then the kid was like, well, what's the point of me even trying to prove anything to you? Because you already make up your mind that I'm rubbish and that I'm not going to do well. And even if I've got a special education need, ADHD, or I'm dyslexic or something, you don't believe in me anyway. So why should I even put out?
See, it's weird. That's a different conversation.
Yeah, it's a different conversation.
But I think I want to put something out there because there was I worked in a school in Southeast London, Elephant and Castle, and this school, when I went there, it was an amazing school. Their ethos was called Create Your Future. Mm. And when I went to this school, they had a nurturing environment where, you know, all the teachers, you know, the school just said to the teachers, you know what, the culture we have here is, want the kids to fit.
Hang on, you're cracking up. The culture that they have. No, you're cracking up.
Oh, sorry, can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Okay, sorry about that.
Yeah.
The school literally created this. I said to the kids, you know what? We want the teachers to share their experiences of adventure in their lives. So that meant, you know what? If a child comes to you and says, you know what? I want to look at your social media account. You know, they're like, if it's something that's adventurous, like your travels, your food, you know, share it with the kids. We want them to experience what the wider world is all about.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never been in a school where they were saying to us, you know what, we welcome you to share your experiences with these children because these kids will never experience holidays, you know, exotic foods and places like you go to, but share it with them.
Mm.
On the other hand, I worked in other schools where we were told categorically, no, you're not allowed to. Mm. But the irony behind it, me, and I didn't realize this until I left the school. When I was there, I didn't realize I was such a positive role model. We had so many black teachers there and black female teachers in that school. It was amazing. When a new head came in, the culture changed.
Mm.
Him being from outside London, he came with a different mindset. People started to change. People started to leave. The culture changed from being this cultural school where everyone was together, the community,
mm.
okay? And the kids bought into the word community,
mm.
okay, we had kids with disability. They didn't, these kids would never have felt disabled. You know, we had a sports day where this boy in a wheelchair, okay, was doing 100 meters. The whole school was behind this boy, and they chanting for him, cheering. It was a tear. I cried when I saw that video. When I left that school, the school I fell in love with, because of that culture, got changed because somebody else came with a different mindset, a different idea of what these children needed.
And that, okay. I think that's the thing, though. And that's why, in a sense, you know, as a parent, it's hard to know what is a good school. And I know that's a different conversation. And we're going to have that conversation, maybe not right now, but we're going to have that conversation. But just from the parent mindset, you know, what I, for me anyway, I mean, I know about nobody else, right? But I mean, about me. If I can't have a relationship with you, whether you're school or whether you're a friend or somebody, in, you know, that I'm going to be close with, if I can't have a relationship where the two of us are able to express and listen to each other, right? Then there's no way that me is interacting with you, and there's no way you're interacting with my child. And and if, like, you know, and I'm sure we will get into it, P, you know what I mean, about another subject about teaching, because we've both been in that, and you're in that profession, and I've been there, and I've been up the ladder, you know what I mean? But the thing is, it's about trying to make sure that our children are as supported during that hostile environment, because education, school can be, for some children, a hostile environment. And even if your kids are bright, you still have to be engaged with that school and know that they're listening to you and that you're listening to them and that you're working in partnership with them.
Absolutely.
And they need to know that as well. But going back to your parenting journey, right, when, you know, because right now you've got an excellent relationship with your daughter, and I remember when I was coaching you that was a difficult, you had difficult time because you weren't able to have as much access as you wanted. How did you get help with that, or how did you cope with that?
Do you know what? The good thing about it, I saw a professional counsellor. I spoke to
a professional counsellor. I'm not even. Yeah. I'm not. You know what? I have to interrupt there, right? Because it's not everybody. No, because you know what? The black culture. You understand what I mean?
Yes,
we don't go out and tell people our business. You understand what I'm saying? So for you to have the mindset to even go to a counsellor, right, is big.
Do you know what? I think what it was for me. My mom's always said to me, "I'm different." She's always told me that. You're very different from everybody else. And you know what? Different is good sometimes, because you think you're outside the box. You see things differently. You approach things differently. And my whole thing was, I was angry at one point, and I wanted to know how to kind of change my mindset to, you know, to be a better dad.
Right.
I wanted to be this role model for my daughter. I wanted to be this person who she could say, and I'm going to be honest with you, I don't want my daughter to be meeting some young man who has no future, no ambition, no plan. I want my daughter to say, my dad's got a plan. He was a designer. He's a teacher. You know, he's doing this, he's doing that. I want her to see that as a positive thing for her.
Mm-hmm.
So when she's meeting somebody, she's meeting somebody who has a vision, a plan, not just a man who's just going to sit there, talk crap, have no future plans, and then I'm sorry, I don't want to be this stereotypical black. I'll be honest with you, I don't want to be a stereotypical black man. I want to be a man who has a plan. I want to be seen as a man with a plan, a man who's going somewhere, a man who's doing something, a man who's hardworking. So I want to be seen as a man.
Well, you are seen as that. You know, you're seen as that, but I think, is it that you're trying to give your daughter a model so that she has something, a yardstick to measure against, saying, if my father's these things and the man who has to have me, or who deserves me, has to meet and exceed my father. Is that what you're trying?
Yeah. Yes. No, why not? I want to lay the foundation for her so she can, you know, choose, make the right decision for herself.
Mm.
You know, and I think that's important. And I think because on one hand, I've come from a broken home. You know, dad, you know, was back in Nigeria. Mom brought me over here to London, England. And I've grown up ever since in England. And this is all I know, okay, as a child and as an adult now. But it means that I've had to work really hard to get where I am because, again, race does also play into it.
Mm.
You know, I'm a black man. I was a young black man before. Police have stopped me. Police have interrogated me. Police have, you know, and they've done what they normally do with black people in general.
Mm-hmm.
But my whole thing is I am not going to be looked at as a normal black person when I open my mouth. I'm not going to be standing there, kid, and effing and blinding. I want you to see me and then think to yourself, this is a man, kid, that I can't take liberties with.
Mm-hmm.
He's a strong person, but he's going to open his mouth, okay? And I'm not afraid to challenge the law. And I have done that several times, okay, when we've been in situations where, you know what, friends I was with did things wrong. We didn't know it was wrong at the time, but the policeman came, okay, effing and blind and everything else. I told the policeman straight in his face, there's no way on this earth you're giving this person a ticket because your attitude stinks.
Mm.
I've challenged him. I'm not afraid to challenge. I will challenge whoever you are, okay, law or not. But I will challenge you in a very professional way so that you not see me as a person that's just going to be open his mouth, effing and blinding, okay, angry. Mm. I can be angry, but I can be angry with intelligence.
So, you know, that is another layer of conversation again about, you know, being black British. Yeah. I mean, I think I have to do a podcast on black British because, no, seriously, because I think we don't talk enough about being black British. We talk a lot about America. No disrespect, you know, no disrespect, but there is a uniqueness about being black British. But also, I think it's that it's not wanting, it's funny because it's not wanting to be perceived as black, but we're black. There's nothing else that you can be. You know what I'm saying? Because I remember when I was at school, you know, obviously I'm 5'10" and, you know, I couldn't hide. You know, I was black. I was the tallest black girl in the school.
Mm-hmm.
But and but I'm naturally a loud and happy-go person, yes? And at school, it was always like, you know, you're the loudest, you're aggressive, you're angry. And I was like, I'm not aggressive and angry. And that eventually erodes or eats at your self-esteem about yourself as an individual, as a black person. And then, you know, you start like, well, of course, one must try and acclimatize to the environment that one is in and spoke as whatever, in order to fit in. But it didn't matter because even when I spoke like that, I didn't fit in with my own group of people. And I definitely didn't fit in with the spoke people, if you understand. You understand what I'm saying, Pete? And so therefore, you can have an identity crisis, which again, I'm not saying it's nothing unique to other countries, but it is something that I think we should talk about, but not right now.
Yes, true. I agree.
You know, going back to what you're saying about your dad, right? Your dad wasn't here. And so you grew up in England with your mum. So do you think that some of the things that you're trying to do is not be like your father? Or do you think that you're trying to be like your father, but a more modern version?
All right, I'm gonna answer that in two ways. it's weird because I have to put it this way, and I'm gonna say this is gonna sound very controversial to people. I'm only.
Are you sure you want to say it?
No, I think I'm gonna have to because I think it has made me who I am,
okay.
And family members have also said to me, "You're just like your dad." Because of these reasons.
Right.
My mom's Jamaican, my dad's Nigerian. Mm-hmm. I left my dad in Nigeria, came over to England. I had a stepdad in England, Jamaican. And he did his best for what was around us at the time. Okay, I came to England, came to the country, and he tried to be a father figure for me. Mm. And he was there for me when I was going through certain things at certain points, you know. And he's a good man, but obviously with the household as it wasn't perfect. Okay,
no household is perfect.
Okay, so on this, and now this is where I say the conversation is going to take a slight controversial point. My stepdad was a bus driver in London.
Mm-hmm.
My dad back in Nigeria is an agriculturist.
Okay.
Working
farmer?
Farmer, yes.
When you say so for agriculturalist.
well, that's the correct terminology. He's an agriculturalist.
Yes, okay. I'm just playing with you, Paul. Go on.
Okay. So for me, I've come from a household, okay, where, you know, back home, you had a, because we come from a big family, very, very affluential back in Nigeria. So, you know, I'm chauffeur driven, you know, different schools, different houses, and they were big houses. So I've come from there to over here now. Small house, no chauffeur driven. You know, dad's a bus driver, fine. But when I was at school, people tried to bully me. And the one thing that always came up all the time was, you're too well spoken, you're too posh, you're too. What I didn't realize, it wasn't the fact that I was posh. It's just that my mom said to us, on no count are you going to bring any street chat into this household.
Right.
You leave the house, you leave that street there outside, and you come into the house and you talk normal. So I grew up in a household where dad spoke eloquently, stepdad spoke eloquently, mom spoke eloquently. I carry on the same situation. So my siblings and myself are all the same. People say we're posh, but it's not that we're posh. It's just a case of my mom said to us, you don't bring in no street in the house. We don't come from those streets.
Mm. Okay. Yeah, so I understand that.
So from the culture side of stuff, okay, at one point I was struggling between the two. It's like, who am I? But I didn't realize that actually, my Jamaican side of myself is the exact same thing as my African side of myself. Both of them, when you meet both sides of the family, everyone is well-spoken. Everyone, okay, is well, you know, behaved, you know, attitude, and carry themselves well, they're well-respected people.
Mm.
It was no different. So for me, at one point, I was struggling because when I was younger, I didn't know where I fitted in.
Yeah.
And then later when I was like, actually, both sides are exactly the same. What am I fighting for? You know, so I wasn't trying to fit in. I just said, you know what? You can't accept me. That's your business. You know, people always, as I grew up, people were telling me, oh, you know, you think you're too nice. No, I'm not too nice. I was just told to carry myself well. Do you know what? There's a situation I had. Sorry, I need to edit it. It's funny.
This is not therapy, Paul. This is not therapy.
This is so funny.
Go on.
I remember one time I was in Brixton. A friend of mine were in Brixton talking. This woman turned up and said to me, "Oh my God, you look well dressed. You look like you got money." And my friend and myself looked at each other thinking, like, what? So I said to her, "What do you mean by I look like money?" She's like, "Look at the way you're dressed." I'm like, okay, how do I look? She goes, "Your shoes look expensive, your jeans look expensive, everything about you looks expensive." All I had on was Timberland boots that cost me, what, at the time I worked in a clothes shop, I paid £65 for it. A jeans, I was £10. I had a Caterpillar waistcoat that I paid, what, £30 from TK Maxx at the time, and a jump from Next, £10.
Mm-hmm.
But her perception of me was I was made for money.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, that status there, it really made me humble myself. So when I saw that, I said to myself, you know what? I don't want my child to grow up in an environment where she's labeled as, you know, expensive, or she's rich and she's got all these things. I said to her, you know what? Humble yourself. When you walk, walk quietly. Don't be loud. just mind your business. Be friendly, be polite to people. You know, I've always said that to her. So when people see her, they always tell me, oh, your daughter looks so lovely. Same thing my stepson. You know, when they see them, humble, polite, respectful. Because I just, that I think that experience of what that woman said really sunk deep in me, in my core, that it made me uncomfortable. And I think that's one thing. Maybe for me, I'm different. I don't like that stage.
You never hear your mother tell you, say you're different already.
Yes.
Okay. So I'm in a way, I'll labor the point. You're different. Yeah, you're different.
And I'm proud of it too.
Well, you know,
definitely proud of it.
It's funny because when I used to go hairdresser, and I'd sit down there because I had been with my hairdresser for a long time, and I remember when the other women used to come into the hairdressing store. They just come from Jamaica, or you know, they're recent. So, you know, they're not speaking the Queen's speaky spokey. They're speaking the way that they would normally speak at a yard. You understand?
Yeah.
But it was so funny, right? Because you know, I'd be sitting there listening, and I understood every single thing they said. But they assumed that because I was born here in England, that I, one, had never been back a yard, two, that I didn't understand some of the lingo that they were talking about. And so therefore, they just freely talked about all their stuff. And I think one day, someone must have said something, and then I turn around and I say, mm-hmm, I say, God, or something like that. And they were like, wait, you understand what we are talking about? And I was like, of course I understand what you're talking about. You know, at what point did you think I didn't? And then my hairdresser would be like, my customer is a professional woman. Yes. She don't speak like Uno, so don't talk like that around her. And suddenly I'd outed myself. You understand? She just cracked up laughing. I mean, you know, but at the end of the day, these are things that bring us together. They don't necessarily divide us unless you want them to divide us. You understand?
Yeah. I absolutely agree, because I think that's the one thing for me, over the course of the years of, you know, having support, going through different sessions of different therapies, speaking to, you know, I've got a really good friend of mine who he's a pastor, he's a counselor, he's a relationship counselor. So I am forever calling him, talking to him, asking for advice and opinion about stuff. You know, even when, you know, when I had this situation with my daughter and my ex at the time, and I went to him, I was like, look, you know, bro, I need some advice. And it's, you know, one thing that was really breathtaking to see the amount of black men out there like myself who are not afraid to just talk, who are not afraid to kill that stigma of saying, you know what, I'm not going to show that emotion side of myself. There's so many of us out there. It just needs the right platform for people just to say, you know what, it's hard, you know. It's this, that, and the other. The guys, I'm very thankful that I've got these men around me who we've all been through different things and we've supported each other. You know, because without each other, I don't think a lot of us would be where we are today.
I remember when we were talking about prepping to have this interview, you had mentioned that there was a group that you had joined because you were looking for help.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
You don't have to mention the group's name.
No, I won't. But basically, in a nutshell, you know, this gentleman, it just felt like a platform for show-offs. You know, they were all just bragging about, you know, how good they are as a father and how wonderful he's done. He's in the papers with this particular governor, this mayor. And I asked myself, I was coming in the group with the notion to hear fathers saying to each other, you know, guys, I'm really struggling with my son. I don't know what to do, or my daughter, blah, blah, blah. And it was a platform just to praise. It's like stroking each other's ego. And I had to leave the group. I just thought myself, this is not what I came for. I don't need my ego stroked to be a good father. If anything, the person I want to tell me I'm a good father is my daughter or her mum or my wife or my friends. You know, people that know me to tell me, okay, blah, blah, blah. But importantly, it's like, I want my daughter, because I'll be honest with you, I want to ask her, but I'm scared to ask her because I don't want her to turn to me, well, Dad, you could do this, 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 and this, and this.
What do you want to ask her?
I, you know what? Genuinely, I want to ask her, how am I as a dad to you? I genuinely want to ask her that question, but there's a fear in me to find out if I've, because remember, if I get a feedback that's not positive, of course I'm going to feel like I failed her.
Well, the thing is, right, to be truthful, right, I go through periods of, I'm really blessed that my daughters are who they are and that we have a relationship that I can talk to them honestly about stuff. And I can also say to them when I can't speak to them about something because I need a bit more time with it so that I get the words right, or it's just not the right time to talk about it. So I feel I've never asked them if I'm a good mother, you know, because there's no, because it's funny, I haven't asked them if I'm a good mother, but they have told me, and I suppose I have waited and been patient on when they're ready to tell me, because they'll tell me in different ways. Like one of them said to me, oh, mum, you know, we thought that you were bad when we told you we wanted to go and spend the night over at so-and-so's house. And you said, I have to meet the parents. I forgot to the host to see where you're going to be. And if the vibe don't feel right about these people, you ain't staying in their house and you ain't staying around them, whether they're friends of yours at school or not. And so my eldest, because she was the first one through it, you know, I went to people's house and so forth and so forth. And out of experience, I let her stay the night. And when she come back the next day, she was like, thank you for the opportunity, mum, but I never really want to do that again because them the people X, Y, Z and Z, right? And then the youngest one was like, I don't even want to ask because I don't know how I'm going to even explain to other people that my mother has to meet you first. My mother has to come to your house and sniff it first before we could even say yes to the invitation. You understand? And yeah. I said to her, well, if those people can't understand why I would want to ensure that you're safe, then you don't need to be around them. So when I'm hearing them now, from after those experiences and they're reflecting on at school days and they're saying, mum, you know, you're a good mum because you did stuff like that. That's when I begin to hear what they think about me as a mother.
It's interesting because my daughter had a situation where she wanted to go spend a night with some friends of hers from school. Mm-hmm. And her mum said, no, they can come to the house. And obviously, she was trying to like, she didn't like the idea of her friends coming to the house. So she was trying to play a fast one with me. So she's like, Dad, you know, I've got this friend I want to go and stay the night at the house. But she thought I'd be like, okay, go. But I turned and said to her, what did your mom say first and foremost? And she explained that mom said, okay, the friend should come to the house. So I said to her, do you think I'm going to go against what your mom said for you? You know, so I said to her, okay, let me make sure you understand something. If you're gonna try and play this game where you're gonna play mom against me, sad mistaken. Whatever mom says is what's gonna happen. So I said to her, if you cause headache for me, okay, and allowing mom to call me and stress me out, I'm gonna stress you out. So I had to tell her, make sure if mom says it's A, you are doing A. If you do anything else other than A, I will come down on like a ton of brick to you.
I will come to you, yeah.
Yeah. So when she heard that, she's like, okay. So she's never played that game again with us. So if mom says it's A, it is A. Mm. When I don't even have to ask a question, you know, she knows exactly what it's going to be. There'll be times when I will say to her, okay, you know what? It's something to experience. I'm like, you know what? Let her do it. It's an experience for her to try something once, okay? And I'm a believer in one thing. I don't like my child to not experience things. I remember when she went for her first concert. Oh, Lord. This is when the Manchester bombing happened.
Oh, gosh, okay? Yes.
So she's got this big thing about, you know, Korean music, K-pop.
Oh, yes. Oh, I love Korean music.
You know what? I will like it.
I'm going to Korea next year. Anyway, go on. Sorry, sorry.
I need to tell my daughter that. She's gonna love you.
No, man, I've done the K-pop Academy. She needs to talk to me because she should be joining the There is a K-pop Academy that the Korean Culture Center.
She's. I don't even know where she's. She does a lot of things with Korea. She's
okay.
Even,
cool.
She's Korean.
Cool. Cool. Okay.
She's properly.
Has
in
she started
the Korean...
to learn the language as well?
Yes.
Yes. Hangul. Yes. 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 Anyway, yes. Sorry.
In her school, there was a bunch of them, and it just grows and grows, even to the point, okay, I love music.
Yeah.
She's even got me. My phone has got albums of Korean music because I didn't know.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
So,
my kids don't understand me at all.
I love it. I won't lie to you. Very happy music.
Okay,
very
anyway,
music,
sorry.
You know? But I forgot where I was.
Concert. You wanted to go to this concert. Mm-hmm.
Yes, so. When the Manchester thing happened, I was like, hell no, you're not going nowhere. And she was like, but Dad, I really want to go. I was like, listen, the bombing's happened. You're not going. And she was pleading with me. I was like, no. Her mom was like, you know what? I don't want her to go as well. But what do you want to do? She's like, we're both saying the same thing. But then what happened was her grandma came from Canada and bought the tickets without us knowing about it.
Oh.
And then... she went, okay, you know what? I was mad. But when I saw her expression and how she felt afterwards, I was like, I can't argue with that. It's an experience that she will never, I can't take that away from her. I cannot take that away from her.
My daughter wanted to go to a concert. I think she was 16 at the time. She's 19 now. She was 16 at the time, but none of her friends wanted to go to this concert with her. And because that's in the middle of my K-pop experience or my journey of that, and it wasn't K-pop, but because I knew that she wanted to go to this concert and her friends wouldn't go with her, I was like, yeah, like you, I want her to go to the concert, but I ended up going with her, right? Anyway. We're going to Camden Town and I'm in the line and I'm saying to my daughter, I'm the oldest swinger in town in this line, right? There's all these people. They can definitely tell I'm some oldie, yes? No matter how much makeup or clothes you wear to try and make you look younger, right? So she was like, Mum, I don't care about anybody else. I just care that you're with me, right?
Yep.
And I said, all right then, my daughter, why am I with that? That's cool. We get to the security. The security looks at me and he says, I've got to ask you. He says, how old are you? I said, bro, look pa me face good. Me look like young chick to you. I said, that's my daughter. I said, I'm the one who's with her so she can get in here. And he was like, oh, because my daughter was panicking, saying that she needed to say her age. I said, you don't have to say nothing. I'm your mother. I'm here. Me, I talk for you, right? So we got in. And I, you know, she wanted to go down at the very front near the stage, right? But because of my old eyes, I could see that if I went downstairs, I would have been crushed like a bleeding ant, yeah?
Yep.
So I said, I'm not going down there. I said, if you want to go down there and get squashed and get your bra snatched off of you and all the rest of it, whatever they're going to do down there, that's up to you. I'm going to go up on the first balcony at the front so I can be resting against the rails and have a really good sight because no one's in front of me. So that's what I decided I was doing. Please ask me, who was the artist that we were going to see?
You can't remember, can you?
I can. Mr. Ask me.
Okay, who was the artist you went to go and see?
Cardi B.
Who?
Oh, my God. Don't tell me you don't know who Cardi B is.
I'm not lying to you, okay? I'm going to put my hand up. I'm one of those people, okay, that loves music. But
no, you don't love music.
I'm gonna explain.
Yeah,
I love
go on.
Music. I love all music, but I really do not like a lot of the music that's out today. A lot of the music that's out there doesn't hit me like the music from, you know, the 90s, 80s, 70s, 60s going backwards. I'm one of those people, okay, that will play. I'm downloading old stuff from when we were raving back in the days.
Okay, look, let me just tell you who she is. She's a rapper, songwriter, television personality, actress. Those are all the titles they give her. I think she was in some, one of them reality shows that she was in and became quite popular from that. So when we went to see her, this was her first outing. This is before she became the Cardi B that is almost equivalent to
her.
Yes. You know who I'm talking about?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
So now can you understand, right? I'm in this concert, all these, it's hip hop, blah, blah, and Cardi B, and they're all raunchy and all the rest of it. And I'm like, Beverly, should you really be here experiencing this with your bitney? Because you're basically saying to her, it's okay. And I'm thinking some of these girls are half naked and it's not okay. But anyway, you know, as you say, you want to give them the experience. She had the experience of going to her first concert with her mum. After that, she was able to go by herself, with friends, whatever. You know what I mean? She had the confidence. And that's what you want to give them, the confidence to be able to experience something new safely as possible. And that you kind of guide them in that. And it's a shared experience between the two of you.
It is. The one thing I will say that I'm really happy is that my daughter's a very confident young lady. Now, she when I look at her compared to some of her friends, she's far out there. She's out there. She's, you know, she's got her YouTube channel. She's got her Instagram account. She's got, she's very creative and very adventurous. And she's not shy of trying something new. And Lord knows, okay, when she starts telling me to do that, and she does this thing with me where when she calls me, she goes, "Hi, Dad." I'm like, "Oh God, what do you want to go buy now?" You know, and I kid you not, this child has the most expensive taste when it comes to tech.
Well, okay? I mean, you're her father, isn't it? You're her father. You have set her an example. You have asked her to that. If anything, they have to exceed you.
Listen, this girl has exceeded me tenfold.
No. You're asking for other men who want the treasure of your daughter to exceed you. So even if she call you and say, "Daddy, me want a Porsche," that's the conversation that you would have with her, and how you have that will help her to handle the conversations that she needs to have in the future about what her value is.
Absolutely. So, and it's even funny you saying that too. Yeah, I'm even scared about that. I was thinking about that recently about driving. Thank Lord Jesus.
Well, you know, Paul, we could talk for England. You understand? But the listeners can't listen for England, right? And as much as I, you know, I have enjoyed this conversation, I think there's only one thing that I wanted to go back to. Yeah. And that was, I want you to answer a silent question that I think has been, that you've raised, but I don't think really we've looked at, because I know that you're respectful. And it is about us women, when the relationship ends, why we treat the partners in the way that we do or could potentially do. And the answer is, and why men treat the women in a certain way, it's because we're wounded, both of us. And two wounded animals, and I'm not referring to us as animals, but two wounded people can't heal each other. And if you're looking to be healed by somebody who's wounded, then it's very difficult. It's not going to happen. You have to get professional help like you have.
Yeah.
And I know I have, as I've had counselling as well. And so therefore, the hope is for the future in parenting. It took two of us, and it'll still take two of us to learn to heal. You understand? Yeah. But as long as we're willing to heal and seek the help where it's needed, and to make that effort so that we are much wholer human beings, so that we can give our children a wholer experience and show them that they can ask for help and get help that will support them and help them to grow just as much as it's helped you and I.
Do you know what? It's interesting you say that, because when I look at my transition from where I was a few years ago to where I am today, and when I was speaking to all these professional people and getting advice from friends as well, and hearing what people were telling me and hearing where I was, where my mindset was at the time, the one thing I realized, okay, when I got into teaching, was that I had to bring in all these emotional experiences that I had in life. And the one thing that resonated heavily with me was when I'm standing in front of my child another person's child, I'm not just talking as a teacher. I'm talking as a, you know, a dad, uncle, brother, doctor, lawyer, police officer, name it. I'm going through the list of every single person out there when I'm dealing with kids. And on one hand, I'm thankful for the experience I went through, because it's made me a better person today to challenge and deal with a lot of things in my life. On the other hand, part of me is thinking, you know, why did I get there in the first place? But then when I look at the bigger picture, if I didn't go there in the first place, I wouldn't have this gorgeous daughter.
And you wouldn't have had that rich experience that you can feed into her and others.
You know, so out of the ashes came this beautiful, you know, blossom, this sunshine of a child that I adore so much, you know. And I wouldn't change it for the world. I literally, there's times I sit back and look and think, what if? But then all the what ifs will be there, but then the outcome will be like, but she won't be there, and she won't be this person that she is today. And I'm like, okay, then the experience are needed. But yes, sometimes, okay, the one thing I will say to men, black men, white men, Indian men, Chinese, whoever you are, talk. Don't just sit there in silence and hold this rage, this anger. Talk. Talk is good. The one thing I think that we as men sometimes, especially black men, don't do enough of is talk. I see young men in schools and they're pepped up, ready to explode. And when you sit down and talk to them and they start pouring out with tears, you know, they're crying and you're like, what's wrong? And they start telling you things. And then later you find out that this child could not open up because there was no one there for them.
Yeah.
It's important. And the one thing that we need to do, as a man, it's important that we talk to our children. You know, I since this lockdown thing's happened, the hardest thing for me has been not able to see my child. Because obviously I'm going into an environment all the time. So I'm very wary about where I'm moving, who I'm interacting with.
Mm-hmm.
And it was hard not seeing her. Not able to, when I saw her for the first time, the hug that we gave each other was amazing. It's like I didn't want to let her go. She didn't want to let me go.
Mm.
Okay. And to me, that says a lot.
Well, that's a lovely way to end our podcast. The first or second of many, I am sure. I want to thank you so much for being willing to have the conversation, for being open and being as honest as you can, and for taking us through some of your journey. Diskyat is back for taking us through your journey. Sorry.
Appreciate it, thank you.
No, man, I appreciate you, and you know, I'm blessed. Even though we don't see each other all the time, I'm blessed. No. I just want to say, you know, I'm blessed. I'm blessed to know you, to have shared a part of the journey with you, and to see the other, to hear and see the other side of this part of your journey.
Yes, true. Thank you. Seriously. Thank you. Thank you for even giving me the opportunity to actually share this information with everybody, whether they find it useful or not.
We're going to leave that into the capable hands of the Almighty. So anyway, people, thank you for, you know, plugging in and staying here with us. Remember, this, we're now on iTunes and Spotify, so subscribe so that every time a new episode comes out, you'll automatically be notified. Like, share, and reach out if you want to be able to talk about your experiences in parenting. So I just want to say thanks for listening. The cat says thank you too. Wishing you and your loved ones daily blessings, and remain safe until next time. I am out.